for the Bears. Williams taken down. First sack today for the Lions. Al-Qadim Muhammad.
Yeah, unfortunately, that was Caleb Williams getting sacked against the Lions. This hour is brought to you by Jewel Osco. This is the Raheemy and Harris Show with Mark Grody filling in for Marshall Harris. We come to you on 670 The Score. And occasionally, I still, I love YouTube. I'll just confess to that.
Not you too, YouTube.
I love both.
Okay.
I love you too, our previous segment, and I love YouTube. And I love you.
You do. You love me?
Sure.
Okay.
Who doesn't love Mark Grody?
Right. A lot of love.
It's like everybody likes Chris Emma. Some people like Chris Emma.
I was going to say, that's very controversial. Only some people like him. And apparently, per the Jason Leisure intro, he wants to fight Chris Emma.
Jason Leisure wants
to
fight
Chris Emma?
Yeah, he wants
to. I don't know what that's all about. But
is this you stirring the pot and instigating in your
absolutely
patented
not.
Grody way?
No, absolutely not.
Are you instigating?
My fellow instigator... Chris Tannehill is the one who I think came up with that particular open where I think it's pretty transparent. Jason Leisure is picking a fight with Chris Emma or suggesting that he will fight him anywhere, anytime. Why? I don't know.
I feel like that might be a little unfounded. Should we ask Jason Leisure
guys,
about it?
I'm going to need you to find the open for Jason Leisure on the afternoon show.
Where he says he's going to fight Chris Emma?
I don't know. Does Chris
this
Tannehill...
This is not the random Bears audio that I thought we were getting into, but it is random audio, and it has to do with people who cover the Bears, so technically it counts. Hey.
Jason Leisure's still here.
Hello.
Jason Leisure.
I will fight Chris Emma in... Starbucks. I will fight him in a Panera.
T? Grody stirring it up? I don't think so. That is Jason Leisure accepting, it sounds like, an invitation to fight Chris Emma.
Yeah.
Emma's got the size factor over Leisure, but I mean, the way Leisure is, like the bulldog reporter he is, I don't trust that he couldn't kick some ass.
I think that you have to respect your opponents.
You got to respect your opponents. I'd like to see the showdown. Who do you take, Leisure versus Emma?
Well, that's a good question. It depends on what you think the fighting style is going to be.
I'm just thinking of somebody getting in their car right now. What do you think of Leisure versus Emma in a fight? What?
I think we're all nerds. That's what I think.
Some people don't like Chris Emma.
Unbelievable, Tyler. I'm getting us back on track.
That's the spirit. So, baby T, did you see Gabe Ramirez here, by the way? He's your founding father. He's your father because he came up with the name Baby T.
That was very appropriate for the 4th of July. Your founding father?
Oh, yeah, you're right. He's your dad.
I'll have to tell him that it's completely blown up since.
He's your radio father.
Poor
I feel
Gabe.
Like when I see Gabe and I see you, I'm like, aw, there's Gabe came up with the Baby T name.
This is just a look into Mark Grody's brain at this point.
At this very moment. Feel free to get it back on track. Ready?
Yeah,
3, 2, 1.
All right. So some Bears audio happened. On YouTube, the, you know, functional internet website that we use, it's an app too. You get video on it.
That's right.
Of broadcast corporations rebroadcast their stuff on there.
It's a neat, neat tool.
It is. It's also one that I use pretty often. And we... came across the Monday Morning Quarterback podcast, that of Sports Illustrated, and it was Connor Orr talking to Albert Breer about the Bears. That happened this week. So I was curious as to what they were trying to parse through when we are, what, 6 weeks away from? No, we're like a month away from training camp.
July
now.
22.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my God. We're within the month.
Weeks. That's,
guys, I got to go. I'll
oh,
take
no.
care.
Yeah, oh, yes. no. Yeah, we're at the three-week mark right now. I was trying to give everybody three more weeks of vacation. Sorry.
I was going to say, I need my rest. What am I doing here?
But the point is, so in this off-season discussion, I'm curious to know why they think that it's a discussion of whether or not Ben Johnson himself is going to put pressure on Caleb Williams. Let's listen.
There's no guarantee that this will be successful, but I do think that Ben is going to try to get the best out of people because if anyone has had the opportunity to watch him at training camp practices, watch him function as a coach, he gets after guys and he is not going to relent. And if you have, you know, these guys who you're depending a lot on, Kyler Gordon, Jalen Johnson, you know, Jaquan Brisker, Tyreek Stevenson, all these guys on the back end yep. of your defense, you're going to get after them. And Dennis Allen's going to get after them. And for whatever reason, whether Matt Eberflus lost the room and lost the ability to get after them, whatever it was, that is changing. And I think it's changing for the better.
Yeah, and I think, like, you see the investment in the lines of scrimmage there, too, with Dio Odunigbo coming over from Indianapolis and Grady Jarrett. And we'll see what he has left, you know. But I think at least putting, like, a that sort of pro in the D-line room can help you. And, yeah, I mean, it gives, like you said, like they invested, they doubled down on Kyler Gordon, which shows how they value that nickel position, a position they really valued in Detroit, too. If you look at, like, you know, the way that they use Brian Branch there. It looks right now like a well-conceived roster. Now, again, like a lot of things have to come together. You can't snap your fingers and make five offensive linemen work together. You don't know, like, if Grady Jarrett is going to – if you're going to be on the hook when the wheels come off, you know. But it does look like they did a lot of logical things. And now I think it puts pressure on Caleb Williams. This is a different environment. Last year, rightfully so, we all made excuses for him, right? And that was fair. Like, those excuses were valid. It, you know, when a guy, like, within the span of the month of November, I believe, loses his offensive coordinator, and then the new offensive coordinator becomes the head coach 3 weeks later, that's a weird situation to be in, you know?
Sure.
And so, like, I think, like, all the stuff we said last year was valid. Now he's got some stability. Now he's got some new linemen in front of him. Now he has, you know, some infrastructure that should at least be able to provide some answers on where he is as a player. And his numbers weren't horrible last year.
No. And there was a game with Thomas Brown where I think he was just that week. I think he got the ball out in like 2.3 seconds or less in average time to throw. And he looked electric. You can't tell me that Ben Johnson can't do that on a larger scale over the course of the season. Caleb Williams has said it throughout his career. I don't want to move around in the pocket. I'm very accurate. I have a great arm. I would just like to drop back and throw the ball. Like, you know, and
he
that
says
sort of has,
it, but I mean,
sure. And does he like to be electric? Yes. Does scrambling offer you some strategic advantages offensively that I think that Ben Johnson will exploit? Yes. But all that said, Ben can turn Caleb into the quarterback that he wants to be. It's just about you have the raw materials.
Okay, so I think there's a lot there. This is Raheemian Harris with Mark Grody and On the Score, and we just took a listen to the Monday Morning Quarterback podcast. Albert Breer and Sports Illustrated writer Connor Orr. You and I both looked at each other when he said the phrase, "We've all made excuses for Caleb Williams." I guess he's right. It's just a matter of to what extent. I'm not necessarily as critical of what I think this performance is going to be this year based on what I saw last year. What were your takeaways?
Yeah, I mean, certainly one. And they even mentioned, too, that when you look back at the statistics of the season, I mean, it does, you know, not bad, you know, especially for a rookie. 3,541 yards, 20 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, 87.8 rating. For this season, and it is true. Like, here's what's on Caleb Williams. Let's do it like that. I was trying to figure out how to do it. Caleb Williams needs to get rid of the ball more quickly. That's on him, I think.
Well, and also, your first drive of the game needs to be better. Like, a lot of those yards came into the fourth quarter where you're trying to play from either behind and trying to get there. You know, you had the chance to win games. There's no doubt about that. We know that wasn't necessarily on the quarterback.
Yes.
But being more successful on your first drives is going to lead you to have even more yards. A lot of it can't just be everybody's passing for their lives down the field in the fourth quarter to try to score.
Absolutely. I mean, as the season went on, eventually it got to a point where I was saying it out loud, saying it right here on the score, that the common denominator in those first drives, you can say, yeah, it's Shane Waldron or the off. It's number 18. It's Caleb Williams. So, yes, that is building the list. Get rid of the ball more quickly. The first drives, I think, were on Caleb Williams. And accuracy. 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 Yes, that can be taught. You can be put in a better position to succeed. But those are things that Caleb Williams himself had struggled with last year that he needs to get better at. Now, of course, look, they had the wrong infrastructure for Mr. Right, the most Mr. Right the Bears organization has ever had in terms of where they drafted this guy, what Caleb Williams is all about. And they had the wrong head coach and the wrong offensive coordinator. Those are legitimate excuses. Those are legitimate excuses. But there are certainly things that Caleb Williams needs to get better on his own.
Yeah, I completely agree. But I also think it's sometimes good to listen to the people who aren't here to take a different look at it.
Oh, yeah.
And frankly, raise your standard.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times that's what they're doing. They're watching better teams day in and day out than we are.
Yeah.
And that's part of it, too. And that brings us to the next part of this Monday Morning Quarterback podcast, which is what you asked Mark Potash earlier, Mark. What is a reasonable goal for the Bears?
For me, optimistic, realistic is if you can get Caleb Williams into the top 10 as in terms of your EPA quarterbacks, mm-hmm. right? If you can get him there, if you can get him realistically getting the ball out in like 2.7 seconds or less, not taking a ton of big hits, not losing a lot of games due to injury, okay? And then if you can get, if you can get one of these guys, like your younger guys, because you have Jonah Jackson, Drew Dahlman, and Joe Tooney on the offensive line. If you can either get a definitive answer on Braxton Jones for the long term, if Azu Tripillo gets into the mix here, if the kid from Yale, like you said, gets into the mix, he was a third round pick in 2024. If you can get some of that youth to come in and you know that they're going to be there and you don't have to depend on aging free agents at the position, I think that's a win. And whatever, we call it eight wins and we call it a day.
Yeah, I think like right around 500 is a realistic, like it'd be a win for them. If they can get right around like 500, which you know, means they're probably playing a relevant game or two, at least in December. Like, I think that's plenty good enough. And I know, again, like this isn't year one of the build for Ryan Poles, but you know, new head coach, you know, the adjustment, the schedule, all of that. Like I think being around 500 is fair.
I've heard this before. I've heard this record before.
Isn't it a weird thing that when we do records now, you can't say 500, and that makes it really difficult when we say around, because when you say around 500, you're either saying a game under 500 or a game over 500.
No, I love that we still basically say 8-8. No, but I actually love it. I love it because it's crap that it's 17 games, and yeah. I know it's going to get to 18, and I don't think that's for the players. But I like that 8-8 is like more of a lifestyle than it is an actual measurement of NFL record.
That's good. I like the way you put that. It is a lifestyle, but I like the fact that we have to make that decision. Okay, you can't say right one game over 500 or one game under 500.
But that's because pretty that's much 500.
But no, but I would argue that being one game over 500, your chances of being in the playoffs are significantly higher.
Especially if you're in the NFC.
And also just mentally, like I feel like that higher number of wins, even if it's just one number, makes you feel better than being, you know, that number of wins being lesser than.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
It's because it makes you feel slightly better.
Huge.
It's because of the 8-8. Because in your heart, you're still thinking it's 9-7 and not 9-8.
100%.
You see?
It's a lifestyle, like you said.
It's kind of like how certain places roll the price back to like $2.94. Like, it's $3. But you think it's cheaper than $2.97 because it technically is. But ultimately, still $3, still 8-8.
That's hilarious.
Which is why I'm like, nah, this is the fourth year of these guys.
This
Ryan Poles, nah, you need 10 wins. I know that's crazy sounding,
yeah.
But you have Mr. Right, as you put it, in Caleb Williams. You have Mr. Right in the coach. I think your standard.
Right.
Should be 10.
Absolutely. It's like Ian Happ. I'm going to make an Ian Happ analogy on your show. Ian Happ saying, well, I guess the only way that I'm going to be able to hit the ball in play is if I hit the ball out of the park. The only way to avoid the lifestyle of 8-8 is to get 10 wins. Then we don't have to talk about that.
And let's face it, 8-8 is a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle.
Like, you know teams where 8-8 is a lifestyle.
Yeah.
You know people where 8-8 is a lifestyle. You're just, your day yesterday might have just been just trying to get through it. That's an 8-8 lifestyle. Nothing wrong with it. Nothing great about it, though, either.
Man, this is a long offseason, says the 708. I keep forgetting Thomas Brown was head coach. he's going to be the greatest. I'm telling you.
That night was crazy.
He's the greatest.
Thomas Brown was the head coach. What?
He's the greatest. He's going to be one of the great trivia questions in Bears history in about 10 years from now. Who coached the finale game against the Green Bay Packers in the year 2024 for the Chicago Bears? And it's Thomas Brown, who broke the losing streak in Green Bay. And maybe if the Bears start another losing streak there, Thomas Brown will become even more significant.
No, I think we actually are probably just not giving him enough credit. We should appreciate Thomas Brown more. He beat the Packers.
Tell you.
When it meant nothing to him.
Right.
Like, we really should celebrate the guy.
Oh, no. I mean, he absolutely deserves celebrating. People liked him. He restored order for about 2 days or so.
and then he noped on out of here.
And then we found out, oh, he's not that great either. As I got, you know, the only thing that was alarming in this podcast sound that you played for us, Layla, is twice they mentioned Grady Jarrett is dying, basically. They said, Grady Jarrett, let's see what he's got left. And then, are the Bears going to be on the hook when the wheels fall off?
Yeah, they did violently refer to Grady Jarrett.
But it's, they're being realistic here. He is 33. He has been in the league for 10 plus years. It's going to happen eventually, but I didn't really want to think about that.
No, and also when you consider the lack of pass rush complement to Montez Sweat, then that all kind of makes it make more sense. They did talk a lot about needing the inside pressure, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. So they drafted Shamar Turner. You've got Jervon Dexter. You've got your guy, Big Bad Bill, coming back. Andrew Billings.
I do love Andrew Billings.
I know you do. I know you love him.
Do you know who else I think I have the potential to love?
Zach Pickens.
Shamar Turner.
Oh, yeah.
Because his film is fun.
Oh,
have you watched his film?
His
film is basically him mowing down people.
Oh, yeah. He's a fun guy, too. Like, the personality matches the tape.
But when you see the tape, you giggle at how badly people look when they face him as the opponent.
Especially when he hit a guy, I think it was
like,
him.
Like, boom.
He hit a guy in the ding-ding, I think, at one point in time. I believe. You love when I say ding-ding.
I do not.
Ding-dong. It gets you uncomfortable. Makes you more uncomfortable, me saying ding-dong or Chris Ranji calling himself daddy?
It's definitely wrong.
The look on your face is the genuine disgust.
It makes me want to vomit every time. And I hate throwing up, but I will do it to get this horrible feeling out of my body.
Yeah, you need to reset the system. You need to power down to get Ranji out of you.
Layla, go ahead. Call me dead.
It's awful. It's one of the worst things ever.
Your reaction to that when that first happened, that's one of the most priceless. That's a score. Like, that. This is why you're about to be from Chicago, because...
He's not from Chicago.
He's not... Was he here for 10 years? Hold on a second.
Yeah, he was.
So I got to give him some Bears, too?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. We got to have a ceremony for
him? Are you okay
him?
With that? I don't know that he deserves Bears.
Yeah, I don't think he does. Well, based on this conversation, I'm not giving Ranji any Bears.
Zero
he
Bears.
He hurt you. He harassed you. You leave my Layla alone, Ranji.
It's just disgusting. That's all.
Yeah.
That's all it really
gross.
Is. It is so horrifying.
Daddy needs to sleep.
Yeah. Oh. Daddy. Daddy Ranji. Oh, Daddy Ranji.
It just makes me vomit in my mouth. That's really what it is. It's just vomit inducing. Like, that. Don't ruin my holiday weekend.
Is it ruined? Is it visual? Can it? Oh. Well, here's another thing about going to Ravinia. You can drink lots of wine there, so you can get that image out of, like, the trauma. Just let it go. Erase it with a nice bottle of red Cabernet.
You know, a lot of people have talked about this wine at Ravinia concept. That has been very popular with the team today.
A lot of help, by the way, on the text line for you at Ravinia. People are waiting to help you and greet you and love you and hug you and hold you.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. There's also a funny line about Jeff Fisher, 708. Jeff Fisher also agrees on 8-8 being a lifestyle. Excellent example.
Yep, but he was an 85 Bear, so he is blessed. He has many, many Bears.
Strong mustache,
good hair, the whole thing. And he had a lot of success for a while.
It's like he could have been Wani's cousin or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right?
That was the good mustache era. And Wani, thank God, has held on to his, and Ditkith, and... the rest of them.
Also, thank you for everybody pointing out that the fight was in reference to the Starbucks discussion between Rappaport and Schultz.
Star Biz
Ux. Owners meetings.
I don't remember what that was in reference to. Did we miss a joke or something earlier? Who did we miss the joke
from?
Well,
the Emma Leisure fight.
Oh, that's what the reference was. Right, right. That's because that's the beauty of the score. We leave out context.
We're supposed to add the context.
If there is one thing that the score is signature for, it is not the Cubs winning the World Series in 2016. It is taking people out of context. And nobody does it better historically than Chris Tannehill. H-O-F.
It's so true.
It's
true. Also, that's kind of the price we pay being radio people. You know who gives a lot of context to most things?
Yeah.
Megan Montemurro.
Oh, yes.
Yes, the Cubs writer for the Tribune.
Miss Context.
Who better to talk about both? Maybe you can look forward to the St. Louis series with her and talk about the current Guardian series. How do you feel about that?
I feel really strongly about this. I am looking forward to talking Cubs baseball.
Let's do it next on The Score.
Raheemy and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, you never know, you know, if you're going to have this opportunity to play in an All-Star game again. And, you know, I just, you know, really want to thank the fans for, you know, their support and all year and their votes and everything to, you know, get me to this point. So I'm really excited to get out there and, you know, play in the All-Star
game. How about sharing the honor with one of your teammates?
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. I mean, obviously, I played alongside him all year and, you know how good of a player he is. And, you know, I think a lot of fans around the world and are really getting to see that. And, you know, he'll put it on full display there, and it's really cool to, you know, go there first of all, and also go with, you know, another teammate that's, you know, his first time there. So, you know, it'll be a fun experience with him.
That was Kyle Tucker talking about being an All-Star alongside Pecro Armstrong. This is Raheemy and Harris on 670 The Score with Mark Grody in for Marshall, and we go to the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. That is where we find our friend, the Cubs beat reporter for the Chicago Tribune, Megan Montemurro. Hi, Megan. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
We simply wanted to talk a lot of Cubs with you, and I want to tell you about something Mark Grody did, because it's funny.
What?
Okay, so Grody, a couple of series ago, was like, oh, the Cubs beat the Cardinals. I don't take them seriously. And then the Seattle series happened and the Cardinals series happened. And now, you know, it's a pretty tight race in the Central. I think he's getting the chance to redeem himself this weekend. So all of that said, do you credit Mark Grody with somewhat of the Cubs 500 finish in June and the slide they've been on, relatively speaking?
I mean, I probably would give the edge more to the players on the field, but I do think, you know, there is something to be said for, you know, the Cubs clearly are aware of, you know, the general narrative that happens when a team goes into, you know, a little bit of a slump. I mean, they had that stretch there where, you know, they had lost 5 of 6 games, you know, they were down 2-0 in the 4-game series to St. Louis. And so, you know, inherently they're getting questions more about the stretch that they're in. And I remember asking in St. Louis Nico about it, and, you know, put it in the context of, you know, it's kind of amazing that it's at the end of June and this is really the first time all season we're being asked about, you know, kind of going through some adversity, which, you know, I thought was an interesting way to look at it. And so, yeah, it's been interesting to see how they've been able to respond after those first two games in St. Louis. And they have a great opportunity tonight to sweep Cleveland ahead of another big series against St. Louis this weekend.
Yeah. Yep. Sounds like it's Grody's fault to me, too, Megan.
You're very nice, Megan. You're very nice.
How dare you bring in facts to this conversation?
My bad.
How dare you? No, but I think there is a reason, though, to anticipate what we're going to see over the weekend. Yes, there you have a game 3 tonight that's important. Cade Horton is on the mound. That's a big deal. But looking forward to that series over the weekend, especially it being here, you know, what do you anticipate it being different about it compared to what happened in St. Louis?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is going to be, obviously, for the Cubs, the crowd. I mean, obviously, there were definitely some Cubs fans at the games in St. Louis. But outside of, I think, one of those 4 games, I mean, it wasn't necessarily a packed house in St. Louis. So I think just the energy level from the ballpark is going to be obviously amplified. And it's been a while since both teams are playing meaningful games against each other. And so I think that's just going to heighten things. Obviously, you have what happened with Wilson Contreras at the end of that game in St. Louis. So who knows what kind of dynamic that brings on the field for the three games over the weekend. But yeah, I think it's to be a really compelling series, and it'll be interesting to see how the Cubs rise to the challenge.
And the Cardinals are, as we speak right now, and I know we are a day away from the start of the series, the Cardinals are five games back in the division, so maybe this is the weekend that the Cubs put the Cardinals away. We shall see. Megan, as for last night's game, it was, as Layla and I were discussing earlier, it was like a maximum effort game where everybody just had to just kind of play through it, play through some pains last night. Shota playing through it after the early 3-0 deficit. Ryan Presley, he eventually has two men on. He had to fight his way out of it. Daniel Palencia at the end of the game, fighting his way through it. It really feels like we're in a position right now where Craig Counsell has found his guys, and he's allowing his guys in the bullpen to play through it. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think just in general, like, you know, for as well as the bullpen in particular has pitched, like, it's not always going to be a clean inning as easy as the group has kind of collectively made it look over the last 2 months in particular. And, you know, it's something that Craig talked about, you know, in St. Louis, where, you know, Palencia got into the situation in the ninth with two on and nobody out and got out of it by striking out the next three guys. And he talked about it in Houston with Cade Horton experiencing a tough outing against a tough lineup, a tough crowd. Like, these are the moments that provide experience and prepare guys for October baseball. And, like, that's what the Cubs are playing for. It's not a, like, oh, gee, if we keep playing well, maybe we get that opportunity. Like, no, like, their goal coming into the season is make the postseason, make a run in the postseason. And so, you know, they have a lot of guys on the team that don't have a ton of October experience. And so, you know, they need these guys to learn how to handle those moments where the situation in the game is not going perfect. And how do they respond to that? And obviously a guy like Ryan Presley has a lot of experience. He's won a World Series. He's been to the playoffs a ton in Houston. And so I think any of those kind of moments are the build for what you hope the payoff comes in October.
This is Megan Montemuro, the Cubs beat writer for the Chicago Tribune. She joins us on The Score. And Megan, I also want to ask you a little bit more about that in particular. You know, we were trying to figure out when the Craig Counsell effect would fully take place. I feel like you're seeing that this season, not just in the selection of who's in the pen, for example, but how he's managing. Mark and I talked earlier in the show about maybe there's not a circle of trust when it comes to the bullpen. It's more like, this is your responsibility. I'm going to need you to figure this out. And that's how they're building roles here. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely see that. And I think, too, it's, you know, there have been times where guys have been given opportunities and they've taken advantage of them. I mean, I think obviously Daniel Palencia is the most obvious example of that. You know, when Porter Hodge went on the IL last month, he might, going into the season, I don't know if anyone would have envisioned in June that he would have been closing for the Cubs, given, you know, how he had pitched the previous 2 years. But it's giving guys opportunities for bigger roles or responsibility based on their performance and what they've shown and the flexibility and willing to do that. Now, I know, you know, maybe some Cubs fans might disagree with that, because I know, having seen it on social media, that there are a lot that aren't happy that Michael Busch isn't getting more at-bats against lefties. And, you know, I understand that, or, you know, where Dansby's hitting in the lineup. But I think what Craig brings is he has a really, I think, solid understanding of his players' strengths, and more often than not is putting them in the position to succeed. Now, obviously not every move is always going to work out. That's not how things go in baseball or in sports, but I think, you know, he trusts his guys, you know, in the position that they're put in to come through more often than not. And that's a big reason, you know, why they're where they're at. And on top of that, obviously you have to have some breakout performances like they've gotten from Palencia, from that bullpen group of, you know, Chris Flexen, Brad Keller, Drew Pomeranz, and then obviously Pete Crew Armstrong, what he's been doing. And so I think it's a multitude of things, but certainly I think the level of trust and understanding of his player strengths plays a big role in that.
And yet another game last night, Megan, where PCA's paws were all over the game for any number of reasons. And one of them was the RBI double that he tried to stretch into a triple. And there's a little bit of a miscommunication with the third base coach, Quentin Berry, on not telling him to get down and slide in enough, which led him to his momentum to pull him off the bag and get tagged out and end the inning. And then we remember, too, that there was another miscommunication between Quentin Berry and PCA in Detroit. Is this just coincidental stuff, or is there like a communication issue going on between those two?
I don't think necessarily. I mean, last night, too, you know, Quentin is also directing
Saya.
Saya. So, like, making sure Saya knows, you know, to go. And also, too, like, I think some of the base runner needing, like, learning when to go into a slide, you know, how to, because my, from my vantage point on that play, it looks like Pete wasn't sure how he wanted to slide into the base, and so he ended up standing up. It looked like he was thinking about, like, sliding into the back of the base. So, yeah, I mean, obviously those are things you do not want to transpire in October. And I think some of it's a combination of, yeah, like, it's base runners getting used to Quentin Berry, you know, being their third base coach for the first time. Some of it is just, you know, Pete is still only 23, and he's still learning and growing into his skill set and understanding, you know, what he needs to do. So I think it's just a combination of things. And I think on the flip side, there's sometimes plays that don't go noticed that pan out. So I think over the course of the season, things generally balance out well. And Craig Counsell's philosophy is to be more aggressive on the bases. And so I think you're going to take more risk, and there might be more outs. I know you're talking more about the mental errors, but I just think, you know, there are going to be times where fans might be wondering, why did they do that? And they're generally, you know, erring towards the more aggressive side on decision-making.
And then, Megan, I also know, you know, we talked about a little bit, Cade Horton taking the mound tonight for the Cubs. We've been keeping an eye on how many pitches he's throwing, how deep into games he's gone. Seems like 90 has been the biggest number that he hit, at least in the month of June. What do you anticipate as far as just how many innings maybe we see out of him, or what the hook is going to be on him tonight?
Yeah, I mean, they haven't really delved into too many specifics of, you know, on an outing-by-outing basis. I mean, obviously some of it's going to depend on how hard is he working through through the course of the game. Is he dealing with a lot of traffic on the bases? And so that always plays into it. And obviously as they, you know, continue to move through the summer, you have to keep in mind the big picture of, you know, his workload over the course of the season, especially, you know, if the expectation and obviously belief is that, you know, if you're going to be pitching in October and you think this guy's going to be helping you, then, you know, what does that look like compared to, you know, his limited workload last year? And for the Cubs, like, you know, they've said that, you know, there's not a hard innings limit. And a lot of that stems from just there's more data now to track on, you know, biomechanics. And so they can get readings on their pitchers of, like, how is their body recovering from outing to outing? And how might that be affecting their mechanics if they maybe are more fatigued from one outing to the next? And so there's a lot of different data they can use to gauge, you know, in the case of Cade Horton, you know, how he's progressing through the season. But I think, like, consistently you're wanting, if you're going to be keeping him in the rotation, you know, ideally it's 5-inning starts on average. It helps that you have some flexibility with a guy like Chris Flexen, who, you know, last time out he went multiple innings again. And so, you know, they have coverage if they need it. But you do want to kind of consistently see that 5-inning mark.
Megan Montemurro, thank you so much for joining us here on the show. We look forward to your work as always in the Chicago Tribune.
Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Megan. That was Megan Montemurro, the Cubs beat reporter for the Tribune. Coming up next, Mark Grody.
Yes.
A wholesome baseball moment, but also another sports gambling scandal.
Ooh.
Yeah, it's the double prong.
We've got another troublemaker. Has somebody been suspended?
I suppose we need to discuss it next.
Something is different?
We will do that on Raheemy and Harris on the Score.
You're listening to Raheemy and Harris, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We'll be right back. love this song so much. Jada, you can find him outside. This is Raheemy and Harris on the score. Ray Diaz on the ones and twos, doing a lovely job today, especially with the music selection. So Luis Ortiz of the Guardians was supposed to start tonight in his last start against St. Louis, Grody.
Mm-hmm.
He threw 7 innings, gave up 6 hits, 4 earned runs, 2 home runs, 1 walk, 5 strikeouts. He will not be starting tonight because he is the subject of a gambling investigation.
Dun, 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 dun.
This is according to Major League Baseball, ESPN as well. Cleveland Guardians right-hander Luis Ortiz under investigation by MLB after a betting integrity firm flagged a pair of pitches that had received unusual gambling activity, sources told ESPN on Thursday. That would be today.
Mm-hmm.
Sources said betting integrity firm IC360 sent 2 alerts in June to sportsbook operators regarding Ortiz, who Major League Baseball has placed on non-disciplinary paid leave through July 17th. The first alert was sent June 15th, triggered action by Ortiz's first pitch against the Seattle Mariners in the bottom of the second inning to be a ball or a hit batsman. Ortiz opened the inning with a slider well outside of the strike zone. I'm picturing this. It doesn't look good in my head. The second alert sent June 27th referenced Ortiz's first pitch against the St. Louis Cardinals in the top of the third inning being a ball or a hit batsman. Ortiz opened the inning with a slider even farther outside the strike zone. So his paid leave, which concludes at the end of the All-Star break, was negotiated between the league and the Players Association. If the investigation remains open, the leave could be extended. And it says he was scheduled to start tonight's game against the Cubs. What a change of events for that guy.
It's like, oh, you saw that? Oh, no. Yeah.
But when they put it like that and you read it out loud, it sounds obvious. And it's not necessarily something you would pick up on. But when they present the information the way they did, it sounds fairly hurtful for him.
Yeah.
Ortiz is 26 years old. He was acquired by the Guardians from Pittsburgh over the winter as part of a 3-team trade. Went to Guardians since second baseman Andrés Giménez to the Toronto Blue Jays. Is he Giménez or is he Giménez? Somebody's Giménez.
You're right. There is a Giménez.
With a 4-9 record and a 4.36 ERA, Ortiz has been a staple in the Guardians rotation, whose 4.13 ERA ranks 18th in baseball. Yikes.
Mm.
So his status for the game is out.
He will not. So, yeah, if you're going out the ballpark tonight to see Luis Ortiz, he will not be there.
Back to you, Mark.
Not be available. Back to you.
We also mentioned a wholesome baseball moment, and it happened yesterday in the Mets and Brewers game where young Antonio Vinziano found out that he was going to be a kidcaster for SNY. This is a yearly event that they do, and this kiddo, he was prepared.
This has become one of the best things we do, one of my favorite things every year. The KidCast is coming up on July 22nd, and the winner this year, Antonio Veneziano, 12 years old from Baldwin, New York, has no idea he won, but he does see me, and I'm walking down to him right now to say hello and also to let him know. Hey, Antonio, what's up, man?
That's your name. Oh my God, he knows my name!
I do know your name. You want to know why I know your name?
Why you know my name?
Would you like to be the KidCaster with Gary, Keith, and Ron on July 22nd?
I would love to. Really?
Really. Absolutely. Yeah, right? You did an amazing job. There were more entries than have ever been had, and you were the winner. I saw it. Your home run calls, pretty spectacular. You want to show us one right now?
Sure. Okay.
Go ahead.
Who should it be?
What are you, wearing Lindor? Do Lindor.
Okay. Lindor smacks one, right field, this one back, it has a chance, and it's gone!
You guys see why he won KidCaster this year? And he's wearing the eye black, too, which I love right now. It looks like you can go out there and play. But Antonio, want to congratulate you, and I look forward to seeing you in just a couple of weeks up there in the booth with the guys, all right?
Thank you so much, Steve.
All right, you got it. Guys, Antonio, he's going to be joining you in a couple of weeks. Back to you.
And his eye black was no joke. It covered his entire cheeks. He was so cute.
I love that. Thank you so much, Steve. Appreciate the time.
I mean, he really did sound like a professional at the end.
This kid,
and
man.
He had a home run call.
Oh, he's good, man. I think you'd get him up there and just be like, hey, we're setting it up here. How you doing, everybody? I'm that kid that you know about. I love that because it seems like so many kids like that get to do cool stuff like field level and all that stuff. There's sort of this sense of entitlement. I didn't hear that in that child's voice right there. Genuine excitement. And I'll say it, a little bit of talent there too.
I agree. Yeah. I loved it when he said, oh my God, he knows my name. Yeah.
I also like the little giggle at the end of the play-by-play he did. We're just like, yeah.
Yeah, because it's almost like the affirmative rather than an actual laugh.
Yeah.
But congratulations to Antonio. I think he's going to do a great job. The SNY broadcast is one of the best broadcasts, I think, in baseball. So he's joining a talented crew.
The texter, you were right, Layla, assuming that the texter is right. Chris Jimenez.
It is Jimenez. Yeah, yeah, that's what I
sounds
thought.
Right.
I forgot who the one was.
You know what I was
but
thinking?
But I knew there was a one.
I was thinking of with the G's and the Herman Marquez. That one always
Herman
used to get
Marquez,
me.
Herman Marquez, the longtime Rockies pitcher.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, yes. Lefty?
I forget. Lefty? Off the top of my head. And for whatever reason, had good games against the Cubs when
yeah.
the Cubs were really good.
That's probably why
I
remember the name.
Don't you remember Joe Madden was like, don't worry about that guy. And we're like, we kind of have to, Joe. Like, he does well against your team.
I do want to say, in terms of the kid broadcasters, our friends at Marquee Sports Network have their own version of this. It's the junior broadcaster. The contest is already done. They have selected a winner. We're just, I guess, waiting for the announcement to hear who it is. But that, you know, after hearing that SNY kid, I'm going to be interested to hear the Marquee kid.
I am too. Oh, yeah. Dude, we don't put them up against each other. That's cool.
No, not a competition. No. I'm just saying that kid was so good. I'm into it.
Yeah. I know. Everybody, see, the thing is now everybody's essentially in media when you consider it.
That's true.
The only thing separating the traditional media types from the non-traditional media types at the time was infrastructure. Well, that has gone away.
Yeah, hey.
So I think you've got a lot of opportunities.
We did score search multiple times here.
So we got Connor McKnight.
We did
I was
going to
say, that guy's now the backup play-by-play man for the White Sox.
Go get him, kid. Shout out to Connor McKnight.
Oh, young Connor McKnight.
Oh, he's just a baby. No, he's old now.
Like Dave the Cat. He's just a baby.
It's so funny because I do think of Connor McKnight as like the new fresh kid on the block. It's like, wait a minute. No, he's old now. Like we're getting past that. He's starting to get up. He's not the new fresh kid on the block anymore.
He is a dad.
He's a dad.
Who has just a baby.
He's just a baby. He's a dad. He is a husband. He is all of that. So
he just has a youthful face.
Yeah, and he's like the tall, skinny guy, so.
He's 6'3". Antonio's dad is Matthew Boyd. Credit to whoever texted on the text line earlier, by the way, who said that the morning show is definitely the responsible show. They said it's the Matthew Boyd show of the score. It is.
Yeah, no, that was really. Yeah, you about lost it before we came on the air when you read that.
I did.
When you read that
text,
I thought
that was so funny. We've gotten some good texts on the text line. Then we get the 815. Don't smoke the cigar like a cigarette. No, you will die.
Oh no, I don't smoke the cigar like a cigarette. I mean,
219 gave you advice. Mark, start off with Black and Milds. Even the cherry one's not bad.
Oh hell yeah!
Oh no, not I mean,
get
like
some Black and
we've
Milds.
Gotten some decent advice too. I have to say,
I've been known to smoke a Swisher Sweet in my day.
Oh wow,
who hasn't?
I mean, they're
it's
delicious.
Been a while, man. It's been a while since I had a Black and Mild. Jeez,
that is how you start.
Gateway. I don't know if I've had a Black. No, I've
I shouldn't be sad. This is very old auntie energy right now. This is like irresponsible auntie energy.
Layla and I are going to go smoke a cigarette downstairs after this.
How am I going to get the bass in my voice if I don't? I can't drink Maker's Mark all the time.
Oh, that's a great, great point. We need that timber from you.
Yeah, I need the Dan Levy voice.
Let's go back.
No word.
Hey, let's get some Marlboro Reds. Hey,
that sounds like Danny Parkins.
They kind of sound alike.
Huh.
They have, those two kind of look alike in a weird way. Like Parkins is skinny Levy a little bit.
Oh my God. A
little bit.
What? I never thought of that. Like, they could be cousins.
Kind of.
Like,
and
I would believe it.
They've discussed it too.
They have?
They've discussed that, yes. Like, you have to, like, you got to kind of give it a look. But yeah, they could pass as cousins and. And voice partners, too. I mean,
the voice twins. Yeah. Nothing tops Colston Loveland and Ryan Poles in my mind. That's number one for me.
Oh, and I feel like you and I are the only ones who, like, Marshall didn't hear it, did he?
He wasn't with us. But those
No, I know, but later we played it for him. Maybe you weren't here. Maybe you weren't here that day, but he was
We did the whole setup for Marshall, and he was like,
He's like, yeah.
He wasn't into it like
that.
What if you hadn't
provided, like, if you just said, like, listen to these voices, what sticks out to you? If you hadn't provided your own opinion on it, would it have been a different, did it elicit response bias?
Yeah, we probably did it wrong. Just go ahead and say it. Yeah, we probably, nobody else.
I am not saying you did. There's no way to really do things wrong.
You are criticizing us, Layla, and you know it. You know it.
I don't know it because I didn't think I was criticizing anybody.
Yeah, you were criticizing Ray.
You know who needs to rule on this argument?
Who?
Matthew Boyd.
Daddy Boyd.
Poor Matthew Boyd is just doing his job.
Maddie
every day.
Rhymes with daddy, which rhymes with Ranji, which rhymes with
I'm barf. Well, that said, let's bring in the Lawrence is looking at me. We're late. Lawrence barf. Is looking at me.
Now you got the ire of Spiegel. You're in trouble. You're late.
The ire of Spiegel.
Oh yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's an actual like curse involving an amulet or something.
It's a Spiegel swoon. You got it.
Oh God. Go to break.